The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows laundry day should be easy. Achieve maximum versatility with a dryer door that swings open either way, making load transfer from washer to dryer a breeze. Plus, with LG ThinQ, save time by controlling your washer remotely. Shop LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances, today at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back in to another episode of The Lawyer You Know. We've got another weekly recap and reaction from my dad on Karen Reed's trial. We had some very interesting witnesses this week, a lot of DNA, a lot of potential credibility issues with witnesses, the Commonwealth trying to build a timeline and build their case and set it all up for their last witness, the accident reconstructionist that is going to be coming next week, Dr. Welcher. What kind of a job did they do in my dad's eyes? Let's get that next. So, Dad, reports are the Commonwealth only has one more witness left next week, and they are going to close their case in chief. We know it's got to be Dr. Welcher if there's really only one left, who is their accident reconstructionist. So Proctor, Higgins, the Alberts and McCabe's that he hasn't called already, Trooper Paul, who was the accident reconstructionist last time, none of them are going to be called, so it seems from the reports. What do you think about that? How different the witness list is and how much shorter it feels like and tighter it feels like the Commonwealth's case was this time around than trial one?
Well, it all goes to show that, again, Brennan had new eyes on the case, totally changed the way the case was tried, totally changed the order of witnesses, totally changed pretty much everything. And, you know, not a bad strategy since they didn't win last time. So you might as well try something new this time. And frankly, I've had the same situation where we tried a attempted murder case once, and we tried it and got a hung jury. And I was a pretty young lawyer at the time, even though I was lead counsel on it. So they brought in the chief of our unit to try it with me. So I became second chair. We tried it a second time, and that time there was a not guilty. So I would tell the guy, at least I convinced a couple people they were guilty. He convinced nobody that the guys were guilty. So trying it a second time, again, totally fresh, totally new eyes, and they did the right thing. You know, it's all going to depend on that guy. I got to tell you, it really is. And Brennan's put all his eggs into him. There is just no way to convict her without him saying the key phrase, you know, collision. Yes, there was a collision. And yes, she backed up into him. He's going to have some problems because the basis for Welcher's testimony are these people that came before him. So whatever testimony Welcher gives, he's going to have to say he depended on X, Y, and Z, witness A, B, and Z, especially Mr. Burgess there. So they're going to be able, I think, to really cross-examine him on the basis of his opinions by using the cross-examination they did on the other experts that we've heard so far. So Welcher's credibility, he might be a great guy. He may be very intelligent. He may have great credentials, but his credibility is going to be hurt by what came before him. And that's the problem that the Commonwealth's going to have.
Yeah, and let's get to some of the witnesses that came before him, which were the witnesses this week. We started out with a couple DNA experts that focused on the fact that John O'Keefe's DNA was on the taillight. We can start with that, and then we'll get to the hair, which they couldn't exclude as John O'Keefe's. We already heard a couple DNA and tech and lab experts say they couldn't actually test the hair. Eventually, we get there, but just starting with John O'Keefe's DNA is on his pants, on his shirt, on the taillight. What did you think from that?
I thought that it was good testimony, except for the fact that they didn't exclude other people. That was their, that was the biggest problem they had. I don't understand why they didn't get DNA from the other people that are, I, you know, suspected of being involved in this case. The Alberts, the chief of police. Now, he may not be suspected, but he handled some of the evidence, some of the, you know, some of the taillights. So why wouldn't they exclude? That's why when you see these, you know, on TV, and it's true, they wear gloves so that their DNA does not get on the evidence. These people, again, a big joke as a law enforcement agency, they didn't wear gloves. They didn't put booties on like they should have to make sure that you know, their footprints didn't trample all of the evidence. So because of that, they were not able to, again, they could have excluded them, but they didn't try. So that was the biggest part of the cross-examination, is not excluding people that they really could have and would have given Brennan a better closing argument than they did.
So it's not just on TV, and I don't want to besmirch every single person that has testified in this case, because there have been plenty of witnesses who said, I did put on gloves. I cleaned this. I changed gloves. I wore a mask. I did all this the appropriate way. I kept chain of custody logs. It's just a select few who just threw every rule out the window, every process and procedure out the window, and didn't do it the way they know they were supposed to. And those are the people they should have excluded if they could have excluded, and they didn't. That's what the defense brought up. But I kind of agree with you. It checked the boxes, right? If the taillight hit John O'Keefe, we've got his DNA on there, so that makes sense. Okay, so then we get to the hair. And this is a hair that the Commonwealth says is John O'Keefe's. These experts testify you cannot exclude John O'Keefe as being the person this hair came from, or anybody on his maternal side. But we're supposed to believe that this hair was on there from when Karen Reed, according to the Commonwealth, hit John O'Keefe, drove back to One Meadows. The car gets driven around that morning. Then it gets put on a tow truck. It gets driven to Guyton, to Canton, all over the place. And this one hair stayed on there until they started taking pictures, and then the hair started moving. So what did you think about the DNA testimony about the hair?
I just got to give my opinion. I think the jury has totally discounted the hair. I don't think the hair makes a hoot. The taillight, yeah. That taillight's really important, and the DNA on the taillight's really important. I don't think the jury thinks the hair has any value whatsoever. It defies common sense, which is something that people have constantly talked about in this case, even the lawyers when they're doing their cross-examination. So the hair defies common sense. It means it's meaningless. It's the taillight that matters.
Yeah, I think that's maybe discounting it a little bit too much, because I think there are some jurors that, if you're trying to walk it down the line and you see the DNA, you think the hair is there. I've had people in my chat say, this is how it lines up. And the hair is usually one of the things they mention as well. To me, it's meaningless. To me, it's worthless. It's just like in cross-examination, the defense lawyers were like, shocker, John O'Keefe's DNA is on his own genes. John O'Keefe's DNA is where his own blood was found. It's on the car that he used all the time, that his girlfriend, that basically lived at his house, drove him around in. Like, shocker that his DNA would be on there. And I think that was pretty effective cross-examination.
Well, let me ask another question. All right, his hair, right? Tell me, I mean, let's say she did back into him. Tell me how the hair, I mean, what, the hair flew out of his head and landed on, she didn't hit him in the head. She didn't hit him in the head. It was the back of his head that was injured. So the car didn't hit him in the face. So the car would have hit him down by the leg area or his torso, you know. So where did the hair come from?
I think they have to say, based on the scratches on his arm, the taillight hit him in the arm. His arm was bent. Scratches came from the broken taillight, and it was a hair from his arm where it hit his arm. And that's what I think they have to say.
I mean,
it doesn't make any sense to me, but I'm just saying, I think that's what they're going to have to say. And in order to say that, they say the data is with them to set up this timeline. They say there was a 3-point turn at 12:24-ish, and then there was a backup event at 12:31/12:32-ish, and then John O'Keefe's phone stopped any human interaction at 12:32. It all lines up perfectly, and who they had testify to that was a man by the name of Shannon Burgess. What did you think of his testimony?
All right. There's two ways of looking at me. Burgess's testimony obviously has two parts. One is his resume credibility, and part two is his technical knowledge. So you've got to distinguish between the two parts. You've got 18 people on the jury. You're going to have some technocrats on that jury that are going to look at every detail and every word that was said. And then you're going to have big picture people who are going to say, what does it matter that he doesn't have a college degree? Is his testimony believable? Does it make sense? So you're going to have at least two camps. You might even have a third camp in there where that people go, gosh, I just don't know what to believe. So his testimony, again, there's two big parts to his testimony.
So I agree with you, but I would say I think there's three camps. There are some that might throw out everything he said because of his credibility issues and the fact that, I mean, that's basically diabolical that somebody would lie about something like that or fill out incorrect dates. We're going to get to that. I think there's some people who exactly what you said are like, yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. What he's saying makes sense. He's not changing with the cell phone reports. He's not changing with the Lexus reports. The timeline is the timeline. I think they're going to be those people, but I do think there's going to be a third camp. Like you said, I just expect their thought to be, you know, I can see where he's coming from, but I'm going to wait to hear the defense experts to see, are they more knowledgeable? Are they more credible? Are they more reliable when it comes to the data? Because they heard DeSorga, the defense expert, his report is in evidence, which I found so interesting that now even if the defense doesn't call that guy, they can use his opinion because Brennan entered his report into evidence, which I thought was so foolish to enter. I don't care how confident you are. I'm never entering the other side's expert report that would never be allowed into evidence otherwise, unless he was like, no objection, Your Honor, because guess what? They can now use that report with any witness they want to. They can have any witness get on the stand and read from the report because it is, in fact, in evidence. So I do think there will be some jurors that want to wait to hear what does the defense expert say about this.
But right now, as we sit here, you know, there's different kinds of experts. This guy is an expert with numbers and data. He's not, I'm going to go spectrums. One spectrum are psychiatrists. There is nothing concrete about a psychiatrist's testimony when he says someone is insane or sane. Yes, I examined him. Yes, I talked to him. Yes, you know, he took the blah, blah, blah test and checked these. I interpret that to mean the guy is insane or incompetent, or I interpret him to be competent. There are psychiatrists right now that never found anybody insane. I mean, the state uses those people. They've never found a person insane. Everybody is sane, no matter what they do. That's one spectrum of experts. This is a spectrum where you've got a guy adding 2 and 2 and it equals 4. And the question is going to be, is his 2 and 2 the right 2 and 2, or is there another 2 and 2? So this guy is a numbers guy, and he's not really giving an opinion. He actually put the numbers up and he actually showed. Now, admittedly, he sure could have been a better witness, but the numbers were there. And if you as a juror look at those numbers, you're going to say, yes, this number and this number adds up to a 19 to 20 second difference. You can add those numbers up. My clocks in my house don't have the same times. Yes, I understand that. That's common sense. Two clocks can have two different times. So he was a numbers guy. So that's why, yes, his credibility was challenged, but I don't think they disbelieve him when he talks about the numbers.
I think some will. I absolutely think some will. You wanted to play a clip from his testimony. Do you want me to play that now?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Because this is, again, when you're watching this clip, the reason I talked about this clip is I watched his face in this clip. And that was important because, you know, the jurors were really paying attention, and watch his face and how he gets red. And go ahead.
And any other professional, that credentials are important. And your profession requires you to provide curriculum vitae, laying out your education, training, and background, correct?
Correct.
And it's imperative, is it not, that the information that is disseminated about your professional credentials are absolutely truthful, right?
Yes, they should be.
You say they should be. Let's continue on with that topic. You understand what's meant by the term ethics, right, generally?
Yes, yes.
And simple ethics mandate that one is truthful about their professional credentials, correct?
Correct.
And a fundamental credential is what type of college degree you hold, correct?
Correct.
people rely on those credentials, and the credentials are the foundation of your expert opinions and analyses, correct?
They can be, yes.
They can be, and they often are, correct?
Yes, they can be, depending on context.
But more often than not, they're important.
Yes, again, depending on context.
You know that not only your colleagues, but your clients, your firm clients, courts, and juries will rely on your CV and your credentials in order to make determinations about whether you're qualified to testify and your depth of your qualifications, correct?
Correct.
You provided the Commonwealth, the defense, and the court with your CV in this case, correct?
Correct.
If I can have a moment, Your Honor, I will.
Yes. Get... For identification.
Well, I
presented
to the
yes.
Thank you.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
TT for identification.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm learning not to talk while I'm walking backwards so Madam Court Reporter can hear me. So I'm presenting you with what is Exhibit TT for identification. Do you recognize that document?
Yes, I do.
And what is that document?
So this document appears to be my CV.
May I approach further?
Yes.
And is that CV a document that you have prepared?
Yes, so that is a document that either I have prepared or the company Aperture has prepared.
And is that a fair and accurate document?
It appears to be.
Your Honor, I offer that into evidence.
Any objection, Mr. Browning?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
And if you could just, if you want to have the witness hold that, I have some
questions. Hold on, let's let it mock first.
Yeah, sure.
Yep. You have in front of you your CV that we just spoke about, and I'd ask you please to draw your attention to the education section where underneath in red it says BGS, and then, do I read it correctly, it says Bachelor of General Science in Mathematics and Business Administration, University of Alabama-Birmingham, Alabama-currently pursuing. Did I read that correctly?
You did read that correctly.
Thank you, sir.
All right. So later on, we find out there are other versions of his CV that he's put on LinkedIn that have been linked to his profile, where it actually says that he got his bachelor's degree in 2024, or that he said 2016 to 2018, he went to University of Alabama, Birmingham. We also find out that Bachelor of General Science or whatever he said does not exist at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. What were your thoughts when you heard that? What is your assessment as far as, have you ever had a snafu this bad in court with an expert, or have you ever seen anything like this, an expert being presented that had that bad of a lie or misleading or whatever you want to call it, mistake on his resume, as simple as the educational portion?
No, I never have. This was, and I, you know, you and I talked about this. This was a function of the fact that Elisi does tremendous research, that he went back and went to all these areas and compared all of his resumes. We're going to see some other great research that he did when he found a federal court case where he presented his CV years ago, although it doesn't sound like he testified in that case. He presented his resume, or his resume was presented in that case as a possible witness. So we're going to see that this is all comes from hard work and preparation. anybody could have done this cross-examination on this guy because he was just so easy to shoot because of how he was lackadaisical in making sure things weren't accurate that were on posted about him or that he presented. So he was an easy target after that. And I've never had anybody that was that blatantly incompetent so that they didn't check their resume and make sure it was right. In fact, what they normally do, experts, is they normally are very careful because they know the other side is going to come after them. So they make sure, you know, if you're going to make mistakes, let's make mistakes on your opinion, not on things that don't matter, like your resume. This was a situation I've never seen anybody, and it's a blatant lie. I've never seen anybody lie about their bachelor's degree.
It's not like he's a medical doctor and he needs to lie about going to medical school in order to testify. He doesn't even need a bachelor's degree to testify about the things that he's testifying about.
Right.
And that's the craziest part. He could still have been an expert without this. And that's why everybody's like, can you believe Canone said he was an expert? It's like, he can be. He can be, and he has been in 5 states with an AA. You don't need a bachelor to be this kind of an expert, right? He's not a medical doctor without a medical degree. It's not the same thing.
Yeah, and I've had plenty of situations, especially in these technical situations or internet situations, where I've had experts testify who didn't have bachelor's degrees. They were self-taught on how things work in the dark web, or you know, how you program something, or how you hack security these guys that are hackers, how many times do we get emails from hackers, or how many times do people hack into our emails and send emails out to other people saying they're us? Those people don't have college degrees. Those people learned because, you know, they know how to do it, and they could testify as experts on how to hack without a college degree. So you're right. Didn't need it.
Yeah. And that was just dumb. But another thing I noticed that I thought was important, I wanted your take on, was Hank Brennan, every witness, every single witness, and we're going to talk about Dr. Wolf in a second, Mr. Yale summa cum laude, he has asked about their education and experience. With this witness, he specifically did not ask about his education. Could you believe? I mean, how obvious. Why not just ask him? I got my AA and I'm currently pursuing my bachelor's. I feel like that would have taken a little bit of the sting out of it. And he just didn't even ask it. And he made another point for the defense on cross to say he never even asked you about your education, did he?
No, not just that. And you know, we'll get into it. But again, the theory of not confronting the negatives in your case, continue with this witness. Brennan could have done a tremendous job on direct of taking out some of Alisi's cross-examination and the points that he made. You know, we'll go on later on about the change reports. He could have totally thrown cold water on Lisa's cross-examination by raising those negatives in the direct examination and raising them the way he wanted to raise them rather than letting Alisi control the narrative. And this is another one. You know, I would be very suspicious, and I am suspicious, frankly, that I think Brennan knew. And I think that's the reason he stayed away from it. He would have been just better off confronting the fact, look, in the past, you've made some errors on your CVs. Well, yeah, there have been some errors. And yeah, you know, I know about that. But the one we gave the defense, there's no question that one was accurate. And if you notice, the defense does not cross-examine me on the CV we gave them to tell them what my qualifications are. They're cross-examining me on old CVs that don't matter. We told the truth to the defense. We gave the defense the right CV, and the defense now wants to ignore the fact that we told them exactly what this guy's credentials were. He could have done that in direct.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have been a big deal. And I feel like if he would have said currently pursuing, the jury might have been like, we all knew he didn't have his degree yet. He said currently pursuing. So, and then maybe explain, I had a bunch of people explaining to me like, oh, well, LinkedIn doesn't let you do that. And I said, listen, you know, and you err on the side of not putting that you have a degree or a certification that you don't. And there were other things he messed up on too, right? People were showing me that he said he wasn't an accident reconstructionist. And then sometimes he said he was. He didn't take a hacking course or certification. His resume said he did. So this was not the only issue with his resume. Additionally, megabytes and bits and the actual technical mistakes that he made, I think there were more ways than just his college degree that his credibility was shot. And when it comes to attacking that as a defense attorney, how do you think Mr. Alessi did? And what do you think it's going to sound like? How much of a part of closing argument do you think this will be?
He did a good job on his cross. Later on, I'm not so sure. But on his cross, the initial cross, I think he did a good job. He pointed out the mistakes. You've got to be careful, though. I don't know what the background of those 18 jurors are, but there may not be everybody with a college degree sitting on that jury. And to say that someone can't testify to something because they don't have a college degree, you emphasize that too much, and you may offend some of those people on that jury. So you've got to be careful about that.
Yeah, I agree. I've heard the jury skews younger, but I don't know. I don't know how that will necessarily affect them. Anything else from Burgess that you wanted to bring up?
Well, are we talking about his total testimony or just his?
Yeah. So we've kind of talked credibility and his education. Now let's get to the actual data and what the bulk of his testimony was.
Okay. I think, again, this is Brennan, but I think that they did a good job. At least Burgess did a good job of showing that he knows what he's talking about when he talks about that 19 to 20 seconds. And he compares it to what the jury knows is known data. They know for sure that there was a 3-point turn. That's a for sure. Later on, that's the reason I think Brennan played that clip of Reed, Karen Reed, because she admits on the clip the 3-point turn. No question there's a 3-point turn. So he can use that as definite cast in stone time period. It actually happened. No question. They compare that to other times that we know about, like his cell phone, and that's how they get this variation. He did a good job of that. They did a good job of taking other known items, like, for instance, when the car was turned on, when the car was turned off. We know when that happened. And there's some interesting things about that. The car was turned off at 12:42:08. Again, clip. Look back the clip. She said she got to the house about 12:41. The internet at O'Keefe's house have her clicking on at 12:36. These are going to be some issues that are coming up, but they came out in Burgess's testimony, not the 12:36, but the time period of when the car was turned on and turned off. That was important. And let's see.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Also, he said his timelines are the basis that Welch used for his opinions. That was a key phrase that's going to come up over and over again. So that's also a very important part of his testimony. So basically, also, in his report, he says that this was pursuant to a request by Brennan. That was in his May 8th report. And that's something we haven't really covered now, was the change.
So real quick,
go ahead.
Before we get to that, because we will talk about the change in the report, but the fact that Welcher is relying on his information, the jurors that believe the data is the data, you know, whatever, that's fine. They'll listen to what Welcher has to say. The jurors that believe this guy's not credible enough, how much do you think that's going to affect the way they look at Welcher, and how much are you going to use that as a defense attorney if this is your case?
Well, you're going to hammer it, and you're going to hammer it in cross, but we haven't heard Welch's testimony. If Welch really is going to come in there and say, yes, you know, I depended on Burgess for these numbers, and my opinion is based on those numbers, it's going to kill him. It's going to kill his opinion, and it's going to kill the common case. Well, I think, with some jurors, well, let's face it, you got to convince all of them.
I agree. And that's what I'm saying. You know what Burgess kind of made me feel more than anything? A witness like him, who is so horrible on one side when it comes to credibility, but almost has a kind of simple testimony based on the data. Like any of us could probably look at the printout and figure out when these timing events were. That's how you end up with a hung jury, where it's like some refuse to believe what he says. Some are like, yeah, I think that's fine. Will you ever be able to bring them together? And Welcher has to be convincing to bring them together. And I do think there's a world in which Welcher is convincing and good enough to where some people may be willing to look past Burgess's credibility issues?
Well, again, we have to hear Welcher. Until we hear Welcher and hear that, we really can't give an opinion. We do know that, you know, Burgess is hurt. We know that there is a you know, he's weak, and if Welcher comes across as really depending on this weak witness, it's going to hurt his credibility. So I think we've got to wait and see how much he's going to say. He depends on Burgess. I'm sure, again, of course, Elise is going to be the guy that's going to cross-examine Wealth. I'll predict that now. And he is going to hammer him on the times and on the data that he depended on from Burgess. And now you want to talk about that change in the report, because that's key.
So May 7th, he says he has a conversation with Brennan. May 8th, he does the report. Brennan in the past said he was surprised to receive the report on May 8th. In the report, it says it was done pursuant to a request by Hank Brennan, and Burgess testified that that was just a copy and paste mistake. He didn't mean it. He did it on his own accord.
Okay. This May 8th change is really important, and I think some of the jurors may really key in on it. The fact that in his first report, I believe it was in March, he didn't even mention any of this stuff in that report, not even mentioned. And then he comes back and he says that it was merely a clarification. Those are the things that hurt his credibility more, I think, than the resume. In my opinion, when I'm looking at it, the fact he didn't include this in his first report, he comes out on May 8th with his totally changed report. And then that's another problem with Brennan, is Brennan in his direct examination should have covered this, should have totally taken care of it, should have taken the wind out of Elise's sails by bringing it up, raising it, going through it, and letting Burgess explain all of the stuff he's going to explain. Because let's face it, he should have prepped Burgess on this. He should have said, look, I'm going to ask you about May 8th. Let's talk about what your answer is going to be. And have that all laid out so by the time Elise testifies, no surprise to the jury, there's a May 8th. Now, you know, it looks like a big deal. And it wouldn't have looked like a big deal if Brennan had brought it out.
Yeah, including
his opening statement. This is the kind of thing you would bring out in your opening statement. But he couldn't because it came out May 8th. Right?
Right. And it's just a simple, you know, 21-second time change. It's not. It was a lot more than that. It was a change. It was an addition. It was an amendment. It was a supplement, whatever you want to call it. It's more information and it's different information. And there's no doubt about it. There's some cases where defense lawyers will say, oh, judge, this completely changes the way we look at the case, which is not really true sometimes. This really was accurate because you could tell by the way that Bob Alessi was cross-examining multiple witnesses and the way Jackson cross-examined witnesses on these fine down to the second data points. And yeah, by the way, it wasn't just a 21 to 29 second difference. He also had the wrong date completely. He had the 30th instead of the 29th. He had a lot of issues with his data. It's like, I do think there are jurors. It shocks me sometimes, but we have to remember there are jurors that will look past this stuff. Maybe they're not on this jury, but in the world, there are jurors that will look past this stuff. Even that he got the completely wrong day, they'll just be like, okay, but it was the right time. We all know what he meant. He put the 30th, he meant the 29th, and it is kind of mind-boggling sometimes.
Well, the wrong day thing too, I that didn't bother me too much, but the fact that he and May 8th changed it because he had to change it, because if he didn't change it, it wouldn't comport with the Commonwealth's theory. And he had to change it in order for the timelines to match for the Commonwealth. That's what I saw. And I think that's what the jury sees too, that without this change, it would have been devastating to the Commonwealth. And this change occurs on May 8th during the course of the trial. That's what's, again, that hurts his credibility to me more than not having a college degree.
Yeah. And again, I think for different people, it's almost like pick your poison with this guy, right? Like what do you think hurts his credibility the most? But what do you think about what Brennan said? What do you think about the fact that Brennan said he was surprised, then come to find out this guy says they have a conversation. And also it is, what am I supposed to do with the report? And he said, go ahead and move forward with the report. And then I produced the report the next day. Do you think Brennan was not truthful when he told Judge Cannone he was as surprised as anybody on May 8th to receive the report?
Well, I hate to cast disparaging remarks on anybody, but it was suspicious. I've got to say, I can't say he was untruthful. I don't know. Maybe he was. but it really is suspicious. The timeline is suspicious. It's all really very suspicious, you know, and the bias, that's another thing too, is in this report, the bias that he shows using the words homicide, using the words collision, you know, Burgess obviously was very biased in the way he wrote the report, got creating a report on May 8th in order to save the Commonwealth's case. That's just way too suspicious.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't want to say I know this is what happened, but just based on my experience in doing this thing where we talk to experts, experts will sometimes call, do you want a report on this? Do you want a supplement or do you just want me to handle it on the stand? Hank Brennan probably said, it's just my opinion, do the report. And then he submitted the report and then Brennan got the report, which would mean he was not surprised to receive the report on May 8th. Maybe he was surprised with the phone call on May 7th. And if he would have said that in court, I can understand how that would be more truthful. Maybe he's kind of coupling them together. I don't know, but there are issues with what he said. We'll see if Judge Cannone deals with it. Do you have any other thoughts after this ruling from Judge Cannone, how you've heard her kind of deal with this, how you heard her give Bob Alessi a lot of leeway on cross with this witness? Do you have any issues with some of her rulings or how she's been handling the trial? People have been trying to send me videos that she's signaling Hank Brennan when to object. That's just so hard for me to believe. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the fact that he's allowing Brennan to break up his expert witness.
You're talking about Cannone, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, you said he, but I want to make sure you're talking about, okay.
I'm sorry, she.
No, that's fine.
Yes, allowing that, you know, that was kind of questionable. This is not really that questionable. The fact that the May 8th report and she's letting it go forward, because number one, what are you going to do? I mean, it's the truth and he's going to testify to it. So you got a report and the appellate courts aren't going to reverse it because let's face it, this cross-examination certainly shows that he had every opportunity to challenge everything that was said. So I don't think he's going to be able to show any prejudice. Again, letting him have that latitude is what cured any prejudice that was going to happen if anybody appealed the fact they got a May 8th.
But I also think it's an undisclosed expert report after the discovery cutoff, so she wouldn't have got reversed if she didn't let it in. The point is, legally speaking, I agree. I'm not at all surprised with her order, but as defense attorneys, it is so annoying that this is what every judge does. They don't get overturned for it. So the Commonwealth, the state, the prosecutors can just violate the discovery rules. And it just is what it is because we're all like, oh yeah, we get it. We know they're going to testify to it anyways. They're not going to get reversed. That doesn't make it frustrating as a defense team to have to deal with something like this.
Well, you know, I'm used to it. When I try cases, you know this, you try cases with me, I bring an empty accordion folder with me to the trial because I know that I'm going to get all sorts of stuff during trial and I put it in this accordion folder so that I keep it straight from the other stuff I got before. And the accordion file always gets full during, especially federal trials, because federal trials are trial by ambush anyway. So in federal trials, we always fill up that. Of course, sometimes I have to bring more than one depending on how long the trial is because you do get handed stuff all the time. And the judge says, let's just go forward or I'll give you a day to work on it. But they never stop the trial and they never say, that's it. You know, we're gonna do a mistrial because of what they did. That never happens. It's never happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But and it has happened to us, and we've made the same exact argument the defense made in this case, and we lost. And it's just kind of how it is. That doesn't mean, listen, we lose rulings from judges all the time. Right? It doesn't mean we're going to agree with every judicial ruling, but we get it. We know why she did it. And it's not going to be something that overturns the case. Now, the splitting of the expert, I think, is very different and much worse, like you said. But anything else from Burgess?
No, that pretty much. I mean, yeah, there's plenty of, you know, testimony that I thought was really outrageous about the triggers and those kind of things. But no, I mean, that pretty much covers it. And I think that we've covered the highlights of it. Yeah.
All right. The next witness after Burgess was Hanley, but we're going to come back to her later. Because she kind of was split into two. And then we had Dr. Isaac Wolf, brain surgeon, literally neurosurgeon, brain surgeon, Yale educated. He did brain surgeries yesterday. He's doing brain surgeries tomorrow. He gets up at 4 a.m. He makes his wife a cappuccino at 6. He comes back home. And then he's doing brain surgery. So what did you think of him as a witness?
Can I just step back 1 second? Because there is something that I thought was kind of unusual. I know everybody knows that she delayed it because of the, some issue with the jury, and she questioned the jurors.
Okay.
But the interesting thing to me was when the jurors came back, they were in different seats.
I've heard mixed reportings on that. I've heard mixed reporting. I heard that didn't happen.
Reports that it said it did. Obviously, we can't know because we can't see the jury. They can't go on the camera.
Right.
Oh, really? I've heard two
stories. What did you think about that? Let's assume it happened. What would you think about that?
Well, I don't know. If the jurors are talking to each other and she wanted to separate some jurors from talking, could there be some calm? Because I think we've heard some jurors kind of laugh or smirk because she's had to admonish them not to do that. So maybe two jurors are irritating each other. She also added to her instructions to don't let other people talk to you about the case. That's something that wasn't said before. So maybe someone is talking to them. You know, I don't know, but these are all interesting things that are going on. And because they're done in secret, because they're not done in front of the camera, we're only speculating. So now we can go to Wolf. But I thought that was interesting that I heard that report that he changed seats.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And I almost feel like if you feel like it's bad enough to change seats, should they be on the jury? Like, what exactly are they talking about? What are they doing? Like, there are issues like that. But this is just so much speculation just because we don't know. Yeah. Okay, Dr. Wolf, what did you think?
Okay, here is a great expert. This guy checks all the, first of all, he looks good. That's always, I'll be honest with you. I've had terrible experts, but boy, they look good and they know how to testify. There was one psychiatrist who used to, and he's passed away now, but we used to call him Sid the Squid. And we used to use him all the time, not because he was a great psychiatrist or a great scientist. He was so good at testifying. When he got up there, the jurors just loved him. Great looking guy, looked like a psychiatrist, looked like a professor, and was wonderful. This guy's got the look. So he gets up there. He's got that great flowing white hair. He gets up there. Not only the great flowing white hair, not only does he look good, and he had to mention this, summa cum laude from Yale. Not just Yale, but summa cum laude from Yale. And then, of course, he, you know, does 4 or 5. Only maybe 1% of his income. I hate to think what his income really is, but only 1% of his income is devoted to expert testimony. And they had to change the entire court schedule to accommodate him. So
I apologize. I was doing brain surgery on children. So I apologize if it affected the court schedule.
You know, so he comes in and he speaks well. He has tremendous confidence. So he doesn't have to fight with anybody. You know, he doesn't care if anybody thinks he's smart or not. He knows he's smart. And so he's going to get up there and he's just going to talk to you and he's just going to tell you, and he has no problem with it. And yeah, I'm not a pathologist. You know, he had no problem. Hey, I'm not a pathologist. I don't even want to be a pathologist. I mean, I see more brains than a pathologist sees, you know.
Those peons, no thanks. I'm a brain surgeon, sir.
Yeah. So he was just wonderful. And, you know, another thing, you know, the fact that he is not a professional witness is a real key, I think, to the jurors. This guy is a real guy. I don't know if you remember the trial we had where we brought in just a regular dentist to testify about some dental issues to prove that dental injury couldn't have happened during the assault. And this guy was a regular everyday dentist, is not an expert, never testifies as an expert. We brought him in to testify. This couldn't possibly have happened. And he was a wonderful expert, and the state couldn't touch him.
So let me just tell the quote. Let me just give the quote. So the accusation was our client who owned, well, we don't need to get into any details, I guess. Our client punched a guy in the face, okay? There was a lot of other factors to it, but that was one of the factors. And one of the major injuries was like broken teeth. And so we have this dentist who, again, just treats people's teeth every day, talk about how horrible this guy's teeth were and the pictures that that they were shown afterwards. He was able to look at them, see the injuries or what was done to the guy's teeth. And he said, the state that this guy's teeth were in, this guy's teeth would have broken with him chewing yogurt. That's how bad his teeth were. Chewing yogurt would break his teeth, which gives you the idea of how fragile and broken. This guy's teeth broke sometime that happened, because we kind of proved an assault never happened in that case because there were no actual injuries. The broken teeth were what they were really going for. And we proved that it never actually happened and we won that case. But the dentist was just A+. He was like, listen, chewing yogurt would break this guy's teeth. Like, let me tell you just how bad it was. And I think the jury loved it.
They did. They did. They loved the fact that he just was a regular dentist that works on people. And, you know, that's it.
So what did you you think about Alessi's cross? It was short. It was in and out. It was simple. He didn't try to battle him on a lot of things. Was that a good move, bad move? Would you have tried to do more?
No. Yeah, Alessi, you couldn't hurt this guy. He was bulletproof. And the more you asked him, odds are good, the more he was going to hurt you. So you get him on and off as fast as you can because, he did some real key things for the Commonwealth. I mean, he was wonderful for the Commonwealth. There was no depression in the skull, so he couldn't have been hit with a baseball bat or anything. That was great. The coup contra coup testimony explained a lot of things. The no idea how he hurt his eye, that helped the defense. But I got to tell you that it was excellent.
But I also think there were some good points for the defense as well. He said he could have slipped and fell. He gave an example of he worked in Minnesota. Drunk people would slip and fall and hit their head on frozen ground all the time. That could easily be something that happened in this case. He also is not, he's a brain surgeon, but specifically he does not treat and determine injuries after death. He treats people before death. He is not a pathologist. He is not somebody who's a medical examiner. And the defense is going to bring people in with education experience that is more on point to the questions in front of them in this trial than this guy. As good as his education experience is, it's just not as on point as who the defense is going to bring. And I do think they highlighted that.
Right.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Okay, last witness we're going to talk about is Hanley, who discussed the glass pieces on the bumper for the cocktail glass, etc. So there's kind of two parts I want to talk about. Number one, she said the debris she tested, the clear and red debris from John O'Keefe's sweatshirt or shirt matched or was a physical match to the taillight. How important do you think that is?
Well, I mean, I think it's important. I think the problem is the way they gathered it. I think that's going to be the attack that's going to be made on it is, this is, again, just such a ridiculous investigation. If I remember right, this is the one where they threw everything kind of into a bag. And
yep.
So I think the chain of custody is a problem. I mean, yes, I think it's going to be a factor. I just don't think it's going to be a really important factor, just a piece of the case.
Yeah, I think, again, if you're looking in line to check these boxes, the hair, the DNA on the taillight, the debris in his shirt, and you're just saying everything the defense say, these slimy lawyers are just trying to trick me and twist words, this is all lining up and making sense. But in reality, fruit of the poisonous tree, basically. Fruit of the poisonous Procter and Buchanan tree. This is a major apple from that tree, right? And if you shake the bag up together, it's going to get on these, it's going to get on all of the articles of clothing that are there. But then the bigger part of her testimony, which was the fact that, and do you want me to put the demonstrative
yeah.
up?
Yeah. Okay. I think that's important because this was put on by Jackson. The testimony that was put on by Brandon was phenomenally confusing. And I don't think it was phenomenally confusing. And this was excellent. What you're going to do.
All Lally did was say 3.2, 3.3, 7.12, 7.14. It's like nobody knows what you're talking about, right?
Right.
At the end of the day, we don't really know what she proved. Now, maybe that was evil genius by Lally, and he didn't want us to understand what exactly she was saying because it's really not good for the Commonwealth. Talk about what you thought about Jackson's cross, about this demonstrative aid, and what we actually learned from this witness.
I think Jackson's cross was good, and it was good because of this chart. It was good because it was understandable. And the jury got to see, the chart. I love the way this is Jackson's chart, but the way he did it was glass recovered by Procter, glass recovered by Procter. So that the jury had no question. There was no question in their mind. This guy Procter, who they're not hearing from, who was not even mentioned during the opening statement, look at this guy, Proctor. And so that was the whole point of the chart, was to highlight Proctor and Proctor's connection to the evidence and how you can look at the evidence and say, gosh, that was the one recovered by Proctor. That was the one recovered by Proctor. And again, you got to go back to Bochanek, whatever, I forget that. I keep always, yes, I never left, right? He was in my view the whole time. You know, remember that testimony. And then you got Proctor getting evidence. Like, you know, they're making a case that if it's not a conspiracy, at least it's a situation of sloppy work, and they can't prove that Karen Reed committed this case. So, you know, and if they don't put Proctor on there, some, you know, if the Commonwealth doesn't put Proctor up, they've got some serious issues after this chart, I think.
Yeah, and what's so great about this chart, and I didn't even notice it until now, I'm looking at it again, is even Bochanek, the pieces of glass he found, at least they match the cocktail glass. So they may have actually been there, right? None of the cocktail glass ended up on the bumper, which I found interesting because the cocktail glass shattered, but none of it got on the bumper, which guess what? If the car was really moving 24 miles an hour and then she sped off, I wouldn't expect cocktail glass to stay on the bumper. So how the heck did this glass stay on the bumper, right? But guess what? Proctor, not only did he not find any of the cocktail glass for the piece of glass he found, but also Bochanek, some of the pieces, E, I, and L, did not come from the cocktail glass. So Bochanek found some other pieces of glass that didn't match the cocktail, but guess what? None of them were on the bumper. Proctor, none of his matched the cocktail glass, and none of his matched the pieces of glass that Bochanek found. So now we're supposed to believe there are three separate glass items at 34 Fairview, and the only one that stayed on the bumper through snowstorms and winds and driving that car all over town was a piece that happened to be found weeks later by former trooper, now terminated, Michael Proctor. That is wild to me. Absolutely wild.
I'm surprised that on the chart they didn't put former trooper Proctor on there when they're identifying him. But again, the whole purpose of the chart obviously was to show suspicion of Proctor and, again, emphasize the Commonwealth not calling him. And this is a great visual. They're not going to forget this. The jury is not going to forget this chart.
I think this is going to get shown in closing. But so what does this make you think, right? Like, if your options are Karen Reed hit John O'Keefe with a car, or there was some kind of conspiracy, something happened inside 34 Fairview, or at the very least, which is probably where I am, this was such a horrible investigation, either negligent or they wanted to make sure they got Karen Reed. So they did start planting stuff and doing stuff and massaging stuff to work their way as the cops. What are you thinking after seeing a chart like this and feeling like Jackson has really laid out that glass came from Proctor, which is very suspicious?
I think the Commonwealth has to explain this somehow. They've got to explain.
How do you explain this?
I don't know. But I think if I was a juror, I'd say, what's the explanation for that bumper glass recovered by Proctor and then this other glass recovered by Proctor? What is the explanation? And you know, if they don't explain it, and the only person that can explain it, frankly, is Proctor. Proctor would be, it's not going to be a good explanation. I don't know. But think about
calling him. I don't think calling him helps that, because they've already got the fact that Proctor found it in the street or whatever yard of 34 Fairview, and it ends up on the bumper. All Proctor can say is, I don't know, I saw a piece of glass at 34 Fairview. I took it, and it happened to match the bumper. I didn't put it on there. How's that help them?
The only explanation, and I know this sounds silly, but considering how these guys do investigations, since they're not careful with cross-contamination and they're not careful with this could have been on Proctor's clothes. Maybe, you know, he had it in his pocket or something, and it fell out at the Sally Port. So that's how it ended up on the bumper. It was cross-contamination and nobody was careful. Nobody made sure that things weren't bagged properly. You know, all of the stupid things that this investigation had, they could try to explain it that way.
I literally said the same thing. And the bad part for the Commonwealth is that's the best explanation they can hope for is that we are such bozos that somehow we dropped this glass on the bumper. That's the best explanation for the Commonwealth, because anything else is a lot more nefarious.
Yeah. I mean, it is. And so,
you keep saying if they call Proctor, are they going to call Proctor? They've got to explain this. Reports are they have one witness left. We know they have to call Dr. Welcher. So knowing that that might be what happens next week, what are your thoughts on the Commonwealth case?
Let me start with something. And if I was Brennan, and I don't know, again, I'm speculating, of course, but if I was Brennan, I'd be sitting back going, okay, after that guy, is one witness the really the way that I want to go on this? Is there ways I can make my case better? I mean, it's a disaster. I definitely think, I mean, I hate to say this, but right now it's absolutely a not guilty. If their expert, their reconstruction expert, is just unbelievably great, which he might be, but the problem you've got is they're going to have experts, and their experts are going to conflict with the Commonwealth's experts, and it's got to be beyond a reasonable doubt. You just can't have two experts saying having different conclusions and come up with a guilty verdict. The instruction tells you that if you've got two theories of equal weight, one saying guilt and one saying innocence, you've got to go with the innocence. It would really surprise me if this was a guilty verdict. And frankly, when this case started, I kind of thought that even with all the incompetence that they could have proved guilt, but I really think that this case has come across worse than I had imagined. And it really does stink.
I agree. It's like Brennan has done a better job, a better presentation, a tighter presentation. He has not brought in as much of the garbage that the defense was able to really blow up the first time.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
But I think the defense has been so much better. So much more focused on reasonable doubt and not proving a conspiracy. So much more focused on proving incompetence and lack of credibility, and that the cancer of Proctor has touched everything. The only chance the Commonwealth wins this case is if Dr. Welcher is the best expert of all time and forces people to understand this injury could have only come from a car accident. It lines up perfectly. His arm bent like this, holding the cocktail glass, measures perfectly. I did a demonstration of how this plastic or polycarbonate can break on a Lexus at 24 miles an hour, shatter, cut his arm, and make him fall backwards on his head. Like, he's got to force everybody into the guilty pack, or I don't see how jurors are voting guilty on this case. And by saying that, I still think there might be some jurors that vote guilty, right? We're just talking about from our own brains. It's so far not guilty at this point. But I think Brennan has probably done enough to maybe convince a juror or two, or maybe more, that this is probably what happened. And even though that's not enough for a guilty verdict, maybe that'll be enough for some jurors.
We all know that jurors come into a trial, no matter what they say, they come into a trial thinking the person is guilty. No matter what they say, they were arrested. We trust, of course, they may not trust law enforcement now, but initially we trust our police. They protect us. They keep us safe. Prosecutors are honest guys, and they're trying to keep us safe. They wouldn't bring an innocent person to trial. So, yeah, you may get not guilty verdicts, but I think jurors start out thinking that this person had to be guilty of something. That's why you've got a couple of jurors, you're right, that if you just give them a basis for finding a person guilty, and that's what the reconstruction guy is going to do, he's going to give them that basis. If they want to believe they're guilty, then they will believe that guy. He will give them enough. But if he's not,
packs of jurors, ones that are, you know, thinking absolutely not, this is a conspiracy cover up, or absolutely not guilty. There's some that think, oh, she did it, and this guy's going to convince us. And then there's some in the middle that I think this guy could possibly convince still, that are on the fence.
I'm not too excited about the conspiracy theory. I'm not too excited about that being the closing argument.
No, I don't think it's going to be. It was the opening. It was the closing. It was everything last trial. This has come across so much better and more obvious. I'm so much more confident, in my opinion, that they have just highlighted all the reasonable doubt in the world. I think their experts and their witnesses are going to highlight it even more. Like, this is a reasonable doubt case because of a horrible investigation that they maybe even tried to boost up with some of their work to make sure they got her because they think she's guilty. The negligence and incompetence in this investigation, the leads that they did not follow, a perfect Bowden defense. Like, this to me is prototypical. You can't prove it, therefore it has to be not guilty.
Right. And I agree with that.
All right. Well, that's it for this week's podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Make sure you hit that like button now if you have not already. Dad, thanks for joining me. Until next week with you, we are out of here. Thanks for watching another episode of The Lawyer You Know. If you enjoyed the episode, please hit the thumbs up and share with your friends who may be interested here on YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. And don't forget to check out The Lawyer You Know podcast with new seasons dropping every quarter. If you have a case you want to talk to us about, if it's a personal injury case, wrongful death, catastrophic injury, car accident, or slip and fall case, please email us at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. And of course, all these links I just mentioned are included in the description below on this episode and every episode. So until next time, this is Peter Tragos, The Lawyer You Know.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.